Good evening, everyone. Tonight we're going to be looking at Exodus 8 and some more of the plagues on Egypt. So the first 15 verses in Exodus 8 deal with the frogs. And this would be one of the gods or goddesses of Egypt that this is directed against is a goddess named Hekt. And she was the goddess of resurrection, fertility, childbirth. And the frog was actually considered a theophany or a representation of this goddess. So being the goddess of resurrection and having a whole pile of dead frogs stinking up the land kind of didn't go over too well for her. So the demand that God gives to Pharaoh, and when you go through these chapters in Exodus, the demand is always the same. Let my people go that they may serve me. So the Lord says to Moses, I want you to go to Pharaoh, and I want you to say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. We saw it back in chapter 5. We saw it in chapter 6. We saw it in chapter 7 twice. We're going to see it in this chapter twice. We're going to see it twice in chapter 9. We're going to see it again in chapter 10. He keeps on repeating the same demand. Let my people go that they may serve me. And every time, Pharaoh ignores it. So God issues him a warning. He says in verse 2, if you refuse to let them go, I'm going to smite your whole territory with frogs. So he gives them a warning, but also an opportunity to repent, to release the people of Israel. Don't refuse this, he's saying. And again, this is a statement that is repeated numerous times. Back in chapter 4, you've refused to let them go. Chapter 7, he refuses to let the people go. Again in chapter 9, if you refuse to let them go. And then finally in chapter 10, he says, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? What is it going to take for you to let my people go? So he's giving him the opportunity. And when we get a little bit later on in this chapter, what amazes me is God's grace and mercy and patience toward Pharaoh. You know, it might not seem that way, but God is incredibly merciful and patient with this man. And I'll bring that point up a little later. I just want to mention it here because he's giving him the opportunity. Get your act together or else I'm going to smite your whole territory with frogs. And that's what he did. He says the Nile will swarm with frogs. So the entire Nile River is going to be turned into this teeming mass of frogs. And they're going to go everywhere. And there's going to be no place that you can go to escape this plague of frogs. They're going to come up into your house. They're going to go into your bedroom. They're going to be in your bed. They're going to be in the houses of your servants, in all your people. They're going to go into your ovens. They're going to go into your kneading bowls. You are not going to escape these frogs. So they're going to come up everywhere. And when you read through these different plagues, pay attention to the words all and every. Throughout every single one of these plagues, all of the Lord's plagues affected all of Egypt and all of the Egyptians, with some exceptions for the land of Goshen and the people of Israel. But all and every are used in every single one of these plagues. These aren't just localized catastrophes. These are national catastrophes. So the Lord said to Moses, verse 5, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff. And again, that's another phrase that's repeated multiple times. So you would think that by the time you get into this chapter or into chapter 9, as soon as Moses stretches out his hand and lifts up his staff, Pharaoh would say, no, 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 stop. I give up. But nope, he just watches Moses lift up his staff and stretch out his hand, and he endures it. So say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, the streams, the pools, and make frogs come up on the land of Egypt. So Aaron did as he was told by Moses. He lifts up his staff, stretches out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and frogs came up. And verse 6 says, they covered the land. They were everywhere. I remember years and years ago, I was driving on a back road in Wisconsin. It was probably late spring, early summer, and it was a marshy area. And there was a stretch of road that was literally covered in frogs. And you couldn't avoid running over them. The sound was horrible, but frogs covered the land. The entire land of Egypt is covered with frogs. And then the magicians come along, and instead of making the frogs go away, they make matters worse. They use their secret arts and make even more frogs come up on the land of Egypt. You wonder, okay, what are these guys thinking? Make them go away. Don't bring more up. And we discussed this last time, the secret arts of the magicians. This is a literal bona fide miracle. And keep in mind that a miracle is simply a supernatural display of power. It's not necessarily a supernatural display of divine power. So these guys, these magicians, are using satanic, demonic arts to turn their staffs into serpents, to turn the water into blood, and now to bring up even more frogs. But they can't reverse it. Their staffs got eaten by Aaron's staff. They couldn't turn the water or the blood back into water. They can't make the frogs go away. So they just made matters worse. So Pharaoh, yeah, he's kind of, okay, that's a lot of frogs. They're everywhere. I can't go to bed without sleeping with a frog. So he calls for Moses and Aaron and says, entreat the Lord that he may remove the frogs from me and from my people. His magicians brought more frogs. They couldn't make them go away. So now he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. Do I want to live with all these frogs or go to Moses and, okay, I screwed up. Please make him go away. So he pleads with Moses. And this isn't the first time he does this. He's going to do it again later on in this chapter. He's going to go to Moses again in chapter 9 and in chapter 10, make supplication to the Lord. Please undo these things for me. My magicians are useless. They just make matters worse. please make these frogs go away. And I will let the people go that they may sacrifice to the Lord. A lie. And it's a lie that he's going to repeat two more times. If you do this, then I'll let the people go. And when the Lord does it, Pharaoh changes his mind. So Moses says to Pharaoh, and I like the King James or the New King James translation of this statement better. He says, accept the honor of saying when I shall intercede for you, your servants, and your people. You tell me when you want me to entreat the Lord, and I will go and entreat the Lord. And when I entreat the Lord, the frogs are going to be destroyed from the homes. Verse 13 tells us from the courts and from the fields, they're only going to be left in the Nile. So Pharaoh says, do it tomorrow, which, you know, causes me to wonder, okay, the frogs are literally everywhere. They are covering your entire country. You can't walk without stepping on a frog. They're in your bed. They're in your ovens. They're in your kneading bowls. And you want Moses to ask the Lord to get rid of them tomorrow? Why not today? How about right now? Make them go away. Nope, do it tomorrow. So Moses says, okay, it'll be as you say, that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. So again, this is a statement that Moses keeps on repeating. The Lord keeps on repeating this statement. I'm going to do this so that you may know that I'm the Lord, so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. Your frog goddess, she didn't help you. There is no one like the Lord our God. So the frogs, tomorrow when I entreat the Lord, they'll disappear. They'll only be left in the Nile. So the next day, Moses and Aaron, they cry out to the Lord concerning the frogs, which had inflicted Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. The frogs died out of the houses, the courts, the fields, but they're still in the land. They're dead, so they're not hopping around, but they're still in the land. So they piled up these frogs in heaps, and the land became foul. There were so many dead frogs that they couldn't dispose of them quickly enough. Or I think the other side of this is, since the frog was considered the theophany of one of their goddesses, they were afraid to dispose of them. And they just left them piled up in heaps. They're not gonna toss the theophany of their goddess into the fire. You know, we'll shovel them out of our houses and, you know, put them in the street, but they're still there. And in the Egyptian sun, they begin to decompose and the land became foul. So remember back in chapter 7, when the Nile turned to blood and the fish died, the Nile became foul. Now the land is foul. So they've got a foul river that stinks. They've got a foul land that stinks. There's nowhere to go to get away from this stench. So Pharaoh saw that there's relief. There's no frogs in my bed anymore. I can go into my bedroom without stepping on a frog. I can eat my breakfast without a frog jumping into my bowl of cereal. When he saw that there's relief, he hardened his heart. And again, this is something that is not going to be the first time. In the next chapter, with the plague of hail, he saw that the hail, the rain, the thunder stopped, he hardened his heart again. So this hardening in verse 15 is hardening number three. And the Lord hasn't touched Pharaoh's heart yet. The Lord hasn't hardened Pharaoh's heart. He's not going to do that until the middle of the next chapter. This is all Pharaoh here. So hardening number three, and you would think that Pharaoh would he'd give more heed to the Lord. I mean, after all, his magicians, they could duplicate it, but they couldn't reverse it. Only the Lord was able to reverse the miracle and provide relief. And you would think that Pharaoh, okay, I get it now. You brought the frogs, you made them go away. You certainly are more powerful than any of the gods that I worship. I understand that. Here's your people. But nope, not yet. So he didn't listen to them as the Lord had said. And the Lord keeps on telling Moses this. He's not going to listen. I'm going to send the plague. You're going to entreat me to reverse it. I'm going to reverse it. And he's not going to listen. He's just going to keep on with his stubborn, hard heart until I have to deal with him more severely. So beginning in verse 16 is the next plague. And most Bibles translate this particular word as gnats. The King James and New King James translate this word as lice. And I prefer the lice translation for the simple reason, if it were lice, this would have been a horrifying plague for the priests of these false gods. Gnats, yeah, gnats are annoying, but lice for a priest was dreadful. The priests, they were required to shave the hair off their entire body, everything. They were not allowed to have hair anywhere on their bodies. They were required to wear a single tunic so that no lice could get on their bodies. Now, all of a sudden, God touches the dust and it turns into lice, and it is on everyone, including the priests. One of their gods was named Geb, and he was the god of the earth, who was over the dust of the earth, and he was responsible for the earth's bounty. So now Aaron is going to touch the dust that is supposed to be under the control of this god. The dust is going to turn into lice and go all over the priests. So this would have been a horrifying thing for these guys. So once again, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand. And no, don't do it. Don't put your hands down, please. Strike the dust of the earth, that it may become lice through all the land of Egypt. The entire land is now going to be full of lice. And like the previous plagues and like every plague after this, everything is affected. So there's going to be lice throughout all the territory of Egypt. So they did so. Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff, struck the dust of the earth, lice on man and beast. So it's not just people that get affected with the lice, it's human or it's the animals that get affected with this lice. And all the dust of the earth throughout all the land of Egypt became lice. That's a lot of lice. That's a lot of dust. It's everywhere. Everyone is affected with the lice. You know, they're scratching and picking it out of their hair and, you know, lining up like a bunch of monkeys, pecking it out of each other's hair. The magicians, they tried with their secret arts to bring forth lice. Again, why you would want to do that? Why make matters worse? How about reversing it? Instead of bringing more lice and more frogs and more blood, how about reversing the problem? But they couldn't reverse it. They also couldn't duplicate it. So this is the end of their duplication attempts. They tried with their secret demonic arts to bring forth lice from the dust, but they couldn't. And they came to the realization, this is the finger of God. This miracle is way beyond our secret arts. This involves a power far greater than the powers we're able to summon. This is God's finger at work here. And they warn Pharaoh. So they go to Pharaoh and they say, this is the finger of God. We can't do this. We can summon some pretty powerful beings, but this is God's finger at work here. And what's interesting is when you look in the scriptures at the finger of God, this is the finger that wrote the Ten Commandments on the tablets of stone. This is the finger in Psalm 8 that created the heavens. This is the finger in Luke 11 that cast out demons. God's finger is involved here. Pharaoh, yeah, whatever. He hardens his heart again. So this is hardening number 4. So even though the magicians, they've informed Pharaoh that this miracle is the finger of God and a demonstration of his power, Pharaoh still hardens his heart. And he's not listening. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Just as the Lord had said. Now, two things I want you to notice. There's no entreaty on the part of Pharaoh for the Lord to remove the lice. And the Lord doesn't remove the lice. So Pharaoh, even though he hardens his heart and doesn't listen, he doesn't go to Moses and say, please entreat the Lord to make the lice go away. And there's no record that the Lord removed the lice. So they're stuck with lice now, and they have to live with it. And there's really no gap between that plague and the next one. So in verse 20, you've got the next plague. And this particular plague, if you notice in the plagues on Egypt, there's actually three sets of plague. And what distinguishes, what delineates each set is each one begins with the statement, rise early in the morning and present yourself to Pharaoh. So the first three began with that statement back in chapter 7, verse 15, go to Pharaoh in the morning as he's going out to the water. Now you've got the second set of plagues, rise early in the morning, present yourself before Pharaoh as he goes out to the water. The third set in chapter 9, verse 13, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. So each set of three begins, or each set, I should say, begins with that statement. First set of three, second set of three, and then you got your third set of four. I toss in the the 10th plague in that, because I think it's the climax, the pinnacle of all the plagues. So this is the third set, and this is a plague of flies, swarms of flies. And this is directed at a god called Khepri. He was the god of creation, and he is typically portrayed as with the head of a fly. Sometimes he's portrayed as a scarab pushing a disc that looks like the sun, but this is the fly-headed guy. And so this plague is directed against him. Rise early in the morning, present yourself to Pharaoh as he goes out to the water. Pharaoh's going out to the water, probably like his daughter did back in chapter 2, to bathe. And say to him what he's said all along, let my people go that they may serve me. This is all I want. I want you to let my people go that they can serve me. Are you willing, Pharaoh, to have your land destroyed by keeping Israel? The Nile's already foul. Your land is foul from frogs. You're covered in lice. That can't be pleasant. Just let my people go. And if you don't let my people go, so this is the ultimatum, let my people go or else. If you don't let my people go, I'm going to send swarms of flies on you and on your servants, on your people, and into your houses. There's going to be dire consequences. I'm going to have swarms of flies everywhere. The houses of the Egyptians are going to be full of swarms of flies, not just full of flies, full of swarms of flies. You know, being out in a rural area, there's flies. I've got friends who are ranchers. When you go to their house, you never leave the windows on your car down. If you do, you're going to have dozens of flies in your car that you're going to transport back to your garage. They're going to fill up your garage. You open your back door. They're going to go into the house. You don't leave your windows down. But these aren't just full of flies. These are full of swarms of flies. And he says, they're going to be on the ground as well. So these flies, they're going to be everywhere like the frogs. But there's going to be more. They're going to fill your houses. They're going to be on the ground. You're not going to be able to escape the flies. But then he says, on that day, I'm going to set apart the land of Goshen. This is the first time where Goshen is set apart. It's not going to be the last time, but this is the first time. In chapter 9, he's going to set Goshen apart with the livestock pestilence. He's going to set him apart with the hail. He's going to set him apart with the plague of darkness. He's going to set him apart with the death of the firstborn. So this isn't going to be the first time or the last time. So he's going to set apart Goshen, where my people are living, so that no swarms of flies will be there. So think about this. Sending swarms of flies to cover the entire surface of the land of Egypt, that's one thing. Preventing those swarms of flies from even entering the land of Goshen, that's quite another thing. So there's really two miracles going on here. Sending the swarms to cover Egypt and separating Goshen from the rest of Egypt by preventing those flies, swarms of flies, from entering Goshen. You know, think about, you got a fly in your house. How do you keep the fly from going into the bedroom? Well, you don't. Flies go wherever they want to go. But now God is separating this entire region in northern Egypt from the rest of the country and not allowing any of the flies to enter Goshen. There's like this invisible wall. Flies can come this far, but no further. So two miracles are involved here. And you know, what better way to distinguish one people from another, one land from another, than to send swarms on one and prevent those swarms from entering another? Perfect, perfect way to distinguish his people. And again, the reason the Lord is doing this is so that you may know that I, the Lord, am in the midst of Egypt. I'm in Egypt. And I'm going to distinguish between Goshen, where my people are, and Egypt, where your people are. I'm in the midst of the land. I can do that. Where are your gods? Can your gods protect you from what I'm about to do? Can your gods prevent the swarms of flies from attacking you? Well, no. So I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow, this sign will occur. So a couple things here. The miracle is identified as a sign. And the sign is the division between the Lord's people in Goshen and Pharaoh's people in Egypt. That sign would demonstrate that the Lord is in the midst of the land, and the sign is going to occur tomorrow. God is patient. He's incredibly patient with Pharaoh. I'm going to give you a full day, ample time, to consider your ways and to repent, to let my people go to serve the Lord. And when it comes to, for example, the plague of hail, I think the plague of hail especially demonstrated the mercy of God, because God not only warned Pharaoh, this is going to happen tomorrow, but I want you, Pharaoh, to tell your servants to bring their livestock and anyone that's working for them out of the field and into the house. Because if anyone or any animal is left outside, it will die. So God mercifully, graciously tells Pharaoh, this is what's going to happen tomorrow, and you need to bring your people and your animals in. He warned them. And it goes along with 2 Peter 3. God's not willing for any to perish. He's patient. Ezekiel says, I don't take pleasure in the death of the wicked. I want the wicked to repent. So he gives them warning. This is what's going to happen tomorrow. You better act on it. So tomorrow happens. The Lord did so. Notice that there's no taking the staff and stretching the hand involved here. This is the Lord simply did as he said through Moses. I'm going to do this, and it happened. There came great swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh and the house of his servants. The land was laid waste because of the swarms of flies in all the land of Egypt. Psalm 78:45 says, he sent among them swarms of flies which devoured them. The land was decimated by these swarms of flies. Pharaoh had warning. Pharaoh could have repented. Pharaoh could have let Israel go, but nope, stubborn heart, Not going to happen. Now his land is decimated. And it's going to happen again and again and again in the next couple chapters. He just doesn't learn his lesson. So he calls for Moses and for Aaron, go sacrifice to your God within the land. So at first, Pharaoh, he doesn't plead with Moses to remove the flies. He's going to do that later on in verse 28. But he says, you can go and sacrifice to the Lord, but you need to do it within the land. So he's going to begin setting conditions. I'll let you go, but you have to do it this way. So this is the first condition. You can go and sacrifice to the Lord, but you have to stay in the land. And Moses says, yeah, that's not going to happen. It's not right to do so. We will sacrifice to the Lord, our God, what is an abomination for the Egyptian or to the Egyptians. And you really have to be careful how you interpret that statement. Moses is not saying that the animals which they're going to sacrifice to the Lord are an abomination to the Egyptians, because they're not. In fact, the Egyptians revered those animals and considered them sacred. They loathed the shepherd, but they didn't have a problem with the sheep. They considered these animals sacred because those animals represented their gods and goddesses. And that was the problem. The Hebrews were going to sacrifice to the Lord what the Egyptians considered sacred. And that act on the part of the Hebrews was blasphemous to the Egyptian gods and goddesses and an abomination to the Egyptians. So it's not what they were sacrificing, it's the fact that they were going to sacrifice something that was sacred. It was the act of sacrificing a sacred animal considered by the Egyptians, and that was the abomination. And Moses says, if we do that, if we take one of their sacred animals, like the bull, which was considered sacred, and or the ram, and we sacrifice it, they're going to stone us. We're essentially sacrificing a theophany of their God. They're going to stone us. So we can't sacrifice in the land. We have to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he commanded us. We have to go far enough away out of the sight of the Egyptians per the command of the Lord to offer our sacrifices. Now, every time he mentions this three-day journey into the wilderness, pay attention to what is not mentioned. There's never mention a return. We're going to go a 3 days journey and sacrifice to the Lord, but they never mention, and we'll come back. That's important. Yeah, we're going to go a 3 days journey and sacrifice to the Lord, and then we're just going to keep on going. They never mention, and then we'll return. I think Pharaoh is assuming that, and Moses, he's withholding some information here. So Pharaoh, he says, okay, I'll let you go. You can sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, but don't go too far away. 3 days, yeah, that's too far. I'll let you go into the wilderness, but stay close by. You don't have to be in the land. You can be out of the sight of the Egyptians, but don't go too far away. So he adds that condition. Oh, and by the way, make supplication for me. Get rid of these swarms of flies. And you know, maybe how about the lice too while you're at it? So Moses says, okay, I'm going to go out. And I'm going to make supplication to the Lord that these swarms of flies might depart from you, your servants, from this people tomorrow. I'll do this tomorrow. So he Moses, you know, it appears as though he accepted Pharaoh's condition to go into the wilderness, but not too far away. At least Pharaoh's allowing them to go into the wilderness. And he tells Pharaoh, I'll make this supplication tomorrow. And again, why not today? Why not right now? I think Moses is delaying the removal of these swarms of flies so that Pharaoh, he's going to have another opportunity to consider how miserable things are because of his defiance of the Lord, so that he won't continue in that defiance. I'll do this tomorrow. Think about how miserable you are with the lice and with the flies and with the stench of the frogs and the stench of the bloody river. And just think about it. And tomorrow I'll take care of this. And by the way, Pharaoh, don't deal deceitfully again in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. You did it once. You promised to let us go, and then you didn't. Don't do it again. So Moses went out from Pharaoh, made supplication to the Lord. The Lord did, as Moses asked, remove the swarms of flies from his servants, from his people. Not one remained. Now, does that mean not a single swarm of flies remained, or not a single fly remained in all the land of Egypt? Could be either. I don't know what happened to the flies. I mean, did, you know, with the locusts, at least in the wind blows the locusts away, but what where did the flies go? Did they just drop dead and pile up, and that would be just as nasty as the frogs? But whatever, not a single fly or swarm of flies remained in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh, back at it again, sees there's relief, hardens his heart this time also. This is hardening number 5. He's got one more to go before the Lord steps in and gives him a hard heart. You know, so basically, Pharaoh keeps on hardening his heart, hardening his heart, hardening his heart, and the Lord is patient. But eventually, the Lord is going to say to Pharaoh, Pharaoh, you like a hard heart, don't you? Well, let me show you what a hard heart looks like. I'll give you exactly what you want. And then it just goes downhill from there. So he hardens his heart again. He doesn't let the people go like he promised. So he backs out on his word, and he's going to suffer the consequences again when we get into chapter 9. And we'll do that next week. Any questions? It's all yours, Fred.